Trending now. Trending now. Here's the top five at five.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's the stories trending now in sports.
Right here.
Right here.
On 1320 KFAN.
Number five.
Gunther and Band, the top five at five, the five biggest stories in sports today in the state of Utah. NBA trade deadline coming past. We'll talk about that coming up in a couple of minutes with the Jazz not making a move. But BYU has a great announcement this morning as they scheduled a home-and-home in 2019 and 2023 with the Tennessee Volunteers on the football field.
Now, BYU's hope is to get the Volunteers here in Provo in 2023. The first game is going to be in Knoxville in 2019. Now, word of advice for any BYU fans going to a game at Tennessee, you will hear Rocky Top Tennessee 8,000 times. The fans sing it. They play it over the PA system. It's a big, loud, intimidating atmosphere, but it's the perfect type of game for a team like BYU going forward. As an independent team, you got to create your own noise. You got to start your own fire here. You got to play LSU to start a season. You got to play Michigan State a year after they win the Big Ten. You can't turn down an offer to play Mississippi State, even if it's the week after Michigan State. BYU's schedules are going to be gnarly the first month, month and a half of the season as an independent team. And I love the matchup with Tennessee. We learned something else interesting is BYU also got a game scheduled with Idaho State. That Idaho State was founded in 1901. What was Idaho like, the state of Idaho, in 1901? I heard they lost most of their football team in 1902 to a bobcat attack.
There was a road, at least one road, I'm sure, that went in and out of Idaho. Maybe it was just a dead end, though, and you just had to circle around and go back.
Tennessee began playing football in 1891. They were founded in 1794. I didn't even know they had candles back then.
I didn't know there was a world in 1794.
Well, it was certainly a flat one.
The dinosaurs were taking over.
Oh, yeah. It was
Here's
a flat
BYU's
one filled with T-Rexes.
2019 college football schedule. They start with the University of Utah. It's a Thursday game. They travel and play at Tennessee. They then return home and play USC. They get to stay home and play Washington the next week. They go on the road and play at Toledo. On the road against a rival in Utah State. Then they're at Washington State. Home against Boise State. TBA, 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 which are 3 weeks to be announced still. Idaho State, at UMass, at San Diego State. That's about a perfect schedule for BYU. Obviously, you'd love to put it in the old Boggle machine and shake it up and rearrange some of those games so you didn't have to go Utah, Tennessee, USC, Washington.
But you got to do that. As a BYU team that's having to handpick each and every game, you're going to have these murderer's row of schedules lined up. But how about for ESPN? They're not going to turn down any one of those matchups. And so what BYU is going to potentially do is they're going to monopolize the market for the better part of a month. Let's call it September or October or whenever these games eventually even out. BYU will average three games on national TV over a 4 or 5 week span that are going to be great matchups. And even if as a recruit, that's the only few times you get to watch BYU, well, that's what it takes. That's the whole point of all this, is to play big matchups, to impress big recruits, to try to grow the brand like every football team.
I mean, that 8 weeks is tougher than the start this year. And we were talking about how this was the toughest stretch BYU had ever played this season. Utah at Tennessee, USC, Washington at Toledo, at Utah State, at Washington State, then home against Boise. Oh, there's a good chance Tanner Mangum is not there any longer. He could. You're probably playing a new quarterback.
Tanner Mangum is going to be an NFL player after this season. He's already older than a bunch of starting NFL quarterbacks right now. So if he's going to make that jump, I think he'll take a look at it after this season. Look, I don't know about projecting to the 2021 season. We don't know what that team will look like for BYU. I'm almost positive Kalani will be the coach for at least 10 years at BYU. Maybe there are different coaches and different players, but what was BYU like 10 years ago? That was the 2007 season. They had Max Hall coming off a year where they had John Beck and Austin Colley. You had Harvey Unga still. You had guys like Jan Jorgensen on defense. My point is, you had really studly teams in the early 2000s. You had Luke Staley winning awards. Then 10 years after that, you had BYU being competitive, and you had the Jake Heaps era after that. I mean, BYU in 10 years is going to still be quarterback university. Hopefully the offensive line's bigger. And maybe that's the only difference over the next few years is BYU grows that reputation on the offensive and defensive line. And you have a big group. Because why not just adhere to the stereotype. If everybody thinks BYU is just a bunch of old men beating up on kids, we'll get a bunch of 24-year-old, 320-pound missionaries and maul those armpit, hairless little boys around college football.
BYU's got kind of a weird 2019. I'll have to figure out how they're going to do this. This is a weird schedule that's set up, because again, I mentioned the names they're playing: Utah, Tennessee, USC, Washington, Toledo, Utah State, Washington State, Boise State, Idaho State, UMass, and San Diego. That's 11 games, but they don't have games scheduled between October 26th and November 9th. Are they going to have two bye weeks in that stretch? Are they going to have to add Hawaii and play play 13 games that week, because you're not going to have two bye weeks in a three-week stretch?
I think it makes perfect sense for BYU to play 13 games as much as possible.
If they can, yeah.
And obviously, to do that, you got to schedule Hawaii. I love that matchup. Why do the normal rules have to apply to BYU? They're the only independent team. They're the only team outside the P5 that has a revenue distribution and a fan base that's equivalent to a P5 program. I love that BYU's got these unique things they're doing. They're going to St. George for spring ball, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. But why not just be as unique as possible? Kalani's the only head coach in the country, just about, that you're going to see dancing at basketball games in the off season. BYU's got this really unique, fun vibe. Just continue to be unique. Schedule weird. Play all over the place. Just play 13 games a year. Why not?
I think BYU has continued to put these schedules together, and we're going to have to get more announcements like this. Probably not for the 2019 season. They'll fill it out with a couple of lower-level teams. I don't think you're expecting another Tennessee to be rolling in the next couple of years. But I think looking at BYU, this is the job that Tom Holmoe has signed up for. When they didn't join a P5 conference, and they're not going to join a G5 conference, they're going to continue to have to try and trick out their schedules with games like this. It's a lot of work, and it's hard to do. And like you mentioned, you set up a murderer's row to begin your season for the first 6 to 8 weeks. They're going to have to figure out if they can keep doing that, or really what is the best system.
Where did that term come from? I got to look that up, because at some point somebody ran into a murderer's row. Does that come from a time where that was a form of public execution or something?
I mean, the only place I've heard it, well, the earliest place I ever heard it was it the Yankees lineup with Babe Ruth forever ago? I mean, that was the original murderer's row, right?
Yeah, you're right. That's what they called it. It was Earl Holmes, Mark Koenig, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, and then, of course, Bobby Musil. And then Tony Lazzari, of course. I was a big Lazzari guy.
Number four.
I knew going in that they didn't want to surrender a rotation player in any type of deal. I knew that, you know, Derek Favors going out, it was going to have to take a significant offer. None of that materialized, but I did think that they would do something around the periphery, maybe bring a player in where they didn't have to, where they could have just taken on some salary, done something like that.
What was the most serious and or plausible trade or move that the Jazz declined, in your opinion?
Probably sending out Shelvin Mack somewhere for a trade exception or something like that. I can't imagine the Jazz just wanted to unload an asset just to get a trade exception back, which they weren't going to be able to use. I think that was probably the most obvious, that a team felt like they could use a third-string point guard, and Shelvin Mack isn't getting any time. And the Jazz said, yeah, we'll do that. We'll make that trade. Or they said, you know what, we'd rather hold on to him just in case George Hill's toe doesn't get better. We'll hold on to that asset and be able to use him down the stretch. I bet you, and we talked about this, I'm guessing there was a lot of smoke and potentially fire with the Shelvin Mack to the Cleveland Cavaliers rumor, until we realized that Dallas was just going to cut Darren Williams.
And now Darren Williams is going to end up in Cleveland.
Yeah, because they're not going to have to give up anything to sign him.
Could the Jazz be in play with Darren Williams down the stretch over the next couple of years?
Well, the Jazz, if they wanted to, they could sign Darren Williams right now, because he's got to clear waivers. And while you're on waivers, you have a 3-day period, I believe it is, in the NBA right now, where teams under the salary cap get to bid on you. Now, with the knowledge...
They won't do that now. Clearly, the time to do that would have been earlier.
It will make him unhappy, because he wants to join Cleveland. I could see Darren in Jazz uniform again in a couple of years, but it would be way... I mean, his career already feels like it's coming to an end to me. I know he's a decent basketball player still, and he's a borderline starter, but there's so many young point guards coming in, an already great point guard league. His value is going to continue to drop, and his body just seems like it's breaking down.
Well, and that's why I think it makes sense over the next couple of off seasons. What if Darren wins a ring this year with Cleveland? What if Gordon opts in? George Hill is a part of the Jazz long term, and the Jazz say, hey, Darren, you know, we can fit you in here as a backup point guard, sure, give you a 2 or 3 year deal. You can sort of ride out your career into the sunset in a different fashion. I would assume Darren Williams would be into that. He still lives here in the off season. It feels like something that would help us out collectively as a state. Although it's pro sports, it's a business. If we never see Darren again, you know, it's water under the bridge.
But it seems like the Jazz have to explore anyone who's willing to live in the state of Utah. I mean, they really do. That was why rumors last year evolved or emerged with Paul Millsap again that maybe the Jazz would trade to get him back, because apparently he's not opposed to living in Salt Lake City. And maybe there are a certain number of guys who don't want to live here. I think winning takes care of a lot of that, because who wants to live in Cleveland? Cleveland's the worst. Who wants to win in Oklahoma? Live in Oklahoma City? Well, guys still go and sign there because there was opportunities to win alongside Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook. There's opportunities to win alongside LeBron James. Jazz don't have a player like that, but they need to show that they can win 50 plus games a year to give a guy like Joe Johnson a reason to want to come and live in Salt Lake City for a couple of seasons.
Stop being politically correct. Stop beating around the bush, and let's talk about exactly what you're getting at. When you say people don't want to sign here in Utah, you're talking about the inversion layer. People fear the pollution.
Players are aware of
that. We can't control it. It gets trapped in the bowl around Salt Lake, around the Wasatch, and players don't want to deal with that.
I thought there were some good deals made around the trade deadline. Oklahoma City sent out very little to the Chicago Bulls to get Doug McDermott and Taj Gibson back. I think those are both instant rotation players. For a team that I thought was lacking talent overall, was probably overly reliant on Enes Kanter when he was healthy to get buckets. Not that Taj Gibson's going to come in and give you 20 points a night, nor is Doug McDermott. But they give you a little bit more depth. They give you some shooting. At least Doug McDermott does. He's over a 35% three-point shooter, which is not huge, but he's certainly not a bad shooter. And I think putting him alongside Russell Westbrook is going to be good for his career.
It was funny when Dougie McBuckets, got compared to Jimmer, and people said, well, why is there a role for Doug McDermott but not for Jimmer? McDermott's 6'8".
Yeah.
You know, say what you want about his speed or ability to cover the ground. I mean, he's got an NBA body. And I'll always remember Taj Gibson for beating out Carlos Boozer, I should say, down the stretch there in Chicago. Boozer was on that, I don't know, what was it, $75 million contract.
Right.
Taj Gibson was a young fella, and he played so much more than Boozer, just like how we saw in Salt Lake. But then you think back to the wheeling and dealing the Jazz had to do. They had to steal Carlos Boozer away from Cleveland.
Right. They had to have Carlos Boozer lie to his owner so the Jazz could go out and give him more money. That's a savvy deal by the Jazz. You'd hate if it was done to your team, but you love it when it's done by your team. A couple of other interesting trades made. The Toronto Raptors got P.J. Tucker from the Phoenix Suns. I think that gives them a nice athlete to go out and defend LeBron James. Andrew Bogut, former number one overall pick out of the state of Utah and the University of Utah, was traded from Dallas to the Philadelphia 76ers. They're just trying to clear salary, but he is going to be bought out immediately by the Philly 76ers, and we'll see where he ends up signing. He can gladly go out and sign a contender. I don't think Cleveland has the room that they could waive some bodies. That might be interesting. Bring in both Darren Williams and Andrew Bogut and get another tough guy down low who's familiar with what Golden State does. I think that could be beneficial down the stretch.
Kyrie Irving getting a lot of attention in Cleveland after announcing that he is a proud member of the Flat Earth Society. If you haven't heard of the Flat Earth Society, it's a proud group of those who feel that it is a conspiracy to depict the Earth as a globe-shaped object. They feel it is a flat surface with which we are all on equal ground, and I'm not sure what the motivation is for the actual conspiracy, but they're into it. Kyrie Irving is one of the most high-profile flat earthers out there.
All you have to do is graduate elementary school to realize what nonsense that must be.
Well, he went to Duke, man.
Number three.
He didn't graduate from Duke.
Yeah, just a year.
Number three, BYU taking their spring football down to St. George. I don't think it's any coincidence that the number one recruit in the state of Utah in 2018, Penny Sewell, is an offensive lineman in St. George. BYU essentially gets a week to audition in front of him and bring him on campus, show him what they can do, not on campus, but to practice, show him what they're able to do. I think it's a smart move from Kalani Sitake, though I don't love that the practices aren't open to fans. I mean, I'd like to see it as the media, and I think a lot of BYU fans would love to get a more personal viewership of their team that they didn't get last year either.
Kalani doesn't owe that to the fans. He is opening up the spring game and he's opening up the practice down there in St. George, but I agree with you. I expected Kalani to give the fans more. You know, people in Provo will show up by the thousands to a random weekday practice in fall camp. They'll show up on the weekends. Yeah, teams in the SEC get that, but not a lot of teams out west have that kind of fan attention. I think Kalani should loosen up on that a little bit in the future, but this is absolutely an attempt by BYU to attract Penei Sewell, and I love it. I think it's a great attempt to get his attention. Penei Sewell is a huge recruit, literally and figuratively, 340 pounds, a cavalcade of offers to all this, the top schools. I mean, he is truly an elite prospect. I'm not sure that BYU has a better chance of landing him than Florida State or Ohio State or USC or Michigan, but right. It doesn't matter. They're changing their entire spring plans for this guy, and BYU's got to continue to be unique. I think it makes sense, and I think if fans want to make the trip down there, which I think a lot of fans will, what sure. is it, 4 or 5 hours? I bet a lot of people are driving down there.
It's a relatively cheap flight if you want to get down there as well. You can stop into Vegas, and that's also a benefit for BYU. You can bring up kids from Tempe. You can bring up kids from Phoenix. You can bring in kids from Las Vegas and say, hey, we're just going to be in town. If you want to come and see what we do, you have that opportunity now to audition in front of these schools.
And that's part of the reason why you would do a spring ball session off campus. Remember, Michigan started doing this a few years ago. They took their entire team to practice down at Florida at the IMG Academy. Yeah. Now, the IMG Academy just happens to produce all the top 20 recruits every single year in college or for college football. The IMG Academy is a mini college. It costs $70,000 a year to go there, which, of course, none of the actual athletes pay for that. They get scholarships to this high school. It's a breeding ground for all the top athletes. And Michigan just ran spring practice there for a week. I mean, that's why the NCAA is trying to crack down on this. Good for BYU for getting in on this loophole, because it's going to be closed at some point here very soon.
Number two,
weird story emerging out of Oregon, which has been too common of a theme under Willie Taggart, their new head coach. Willie Taggart is not speaking with the lead sports reporter from the Oregonian, which is a very highly reputable newspaper covering sports. A lot of our stories we get when we talk about Oregon come from the Oregonian, because he feels the writer was unfair in categorizing their off-season training camp that landed three kids in the hospital as militaristic in nature.
Well, now, Andrew Grief is the guy here, the media member who is credited for breaking the story here, and the story is that Oregon had to send three players to the hospital after their opening workout of the offseason. Now, it's not Andrew Grief's fault. You know, these records are open. He wrote a story about three players being hospitalized. And if Willie Taggart didn't want that story written, well, then have a team that's better prepared for your offseason program, or don't hospitalize guys, or both. But then to make matters worse now, Willie Taggart's trying to freeze him out. He's trying to not talk to, like you said, the Oregonian or this one individual reporter. Look, the last thing you want to do as a college football head coach is give the media power. The media is there to cover your product. You're in control. You're the head coach. You're driving the car around the track. Then all of a sudden, when you give the media this power and you try to blackball him here, you open up a whole different set of issues here. The media is not there to cover football. The media is there for checks and balances. The media is not there just for opinions. Opinions matter, of course, but the media is there for a very important reason in politics, in sports, and in every aspect of reporting. It's supposed to be the third party that's just giving you a non-biased look at the situation. Willie Taggart has made now three different mistakes as head coach, including hiring guys who are getting DUIs near campus.
He's put three kids in the hospital. He's had to suspend one coach for an entire month. He's had to fire one coach for getting a DUI and lost another coach to UCLA. He's had lots of issues at Oregon, and now he's bringing more bad grief upon himself.
He said to Andrew Grief, did Willie Taggart, the head coach at Oregon, when you do something that's negative, it's going to be personal. And then I don't have bleep to do with you. Well, here's the deal. You can't get only positive stories written about
you. What happens when you lose three games straight next season?
No head coach expects there to only be positive coverage. Go listen to any head coach behind the scenes in a team meeting. When you lose a game, he's not positive. Now, the way that you handle this, the way most schools and coaches handle this, is they deal with the ups, they deal with the downs. They don't break their arms from patting themselves on the back when the media is giving them respect when they're playing well, and they don't cry about it when they're playing poorly and the media is writing about that as well. Willie Taggart here can add this as another mistake he's made. Oregon's not happy, I'm sure, with the early results.
Number one,
the big story, the South strengths in the Pac-12, according to ESPN blog. They went through and ranked every team's biggest strengths going into the 2017 college football season. For the University of Utah, it's low-hanging fruit, but it's true, and I think Utah is going to have to rely on it even more next year as they try and add in this new offense, whether they have the players or not, to run it. That defensive line is going to have to be dominant. It has been in the past. The last year was probably a little more beat up than they expected with Lowell Lotulelei in and out of the lineup, and Kylie Fitz hurt for the entire season. Having those two guys back next year at full strength is going to give Utah a very dangerous pass rush and strong against the run.
Utah's never had a better group of offensive and defensive linemen in the same year as what they had in 2016. Four O-linemen go to the combine. There's five defensive linemen that make all-conference. Utah returns a bunch of those names. They're going to have versatility there. I think the D-line and linebackers are going to be a real strength. And yeah, yet again, Utah's D-line is one of the best in the country. It's not an accident. Kyle Whittingham deserves a ton of credit for that. The program has built this as their identity, and it's a reasonable identity. Utah's had amazing luck with kickers, punters, defensive linemen, you know, cornerbacks. When you start to think about all that success, you realize it's not luck. It's Kyle Whittingham knowing how to recruit for his program. Now, yeah, they have a number one overall pick at quarterback, but Alex Smith is a former zero-star recruit. Utah's MO is not about recruiting quarterbacks or wide receivers because four- and five-star quarterbacks don't want to shovel snow off their driveway. That's going to be a factor for Utah throughout, but guess what? Offensive and defensive linemen are not just handsome, they're tough dudes, and they don't mind working hard. And that's why there have been truly dozens of elite success stories on the line of scrimmage at Utah. That's where the bread is buttered.
And they're dumb enough to shovel snow.
Shoveling snow is the worst, man. I waited today because I said, I'm not going to do it. I don't think this is enough of a storm, and it really wasn't. Don't put up with the storm or the cold weather when you're trying to enjoy the outdoors. You're trying to go camping with the family. Stop sleeping in a tent, or you're most likely going to be attacked by a Yeti. Go to Terry's RV today. They've been in business for over 50 years, helping families in Utah enjoy the outdoors. They've got the motorhomes, the toy haulers, the trailers, the RVs that you've been dreaming of. They got the 2017 models there. They have almost 200 units there on the lot, 5545 South and State Street in Murray, or terrysrv.com. It's Terry's RV.
Coming up next, we take a closer look at BYU's 2019 schedule. Stay tuned. Gunther and Ben
on 1320 KFAN.
Gunther and Ben in the afternoon.
Hey, fan, 527, he's Kyle Gunther. I'm Ben Anderson. A very happy Thursday to everybody out there.
BYU and Tennessee have added a game now in 2019 and 2023. The 2019 football schedule for BYU is a doozy.
Yeah.
As is currently constituted right now, you're playing Washington. You're playing Utah. You're playing Tennessee.
USC.
USC.
Yeah.
BYU is not in a position to shy away from any matchup here, but they are still fighting the battle of trying not to be bought out. A lot of teams schedule home and homes with BYU, and they buy out of the trip to Provo because most likely you're showing up in front of 65,000 people in a cold weather stadium that is a losable game for any team flying across the country there. So that's always going to be a battle for BYU, but you know, as we just talked about Willie Taggart at Oregon, you and I, in the span of about 30 seconds, just kind of casually went over that Oregon had to send some players to the hospital because they either misevaluated their own abilities or pushed these kids too hard, maybe both. Oregon had to fire a coach because of a DUI,
right,
which you're in the damn building for 19 hours a day. Where are you going to get a DUI? Then Willie Taggart had to suspend the strength coach. He's had a whole different set of issues. Now he's having a beef with the media here. He's cursing out media members. The guy who just reported the story that Willie Taggart sent guys to the hospital. What's the worst thing Kalani did in his rookie year as a head coach?
He got a penalty for running on the field against Utah,
which ended up causing a great play for his
right.
defense.
Yeah, it didn't hurt him.
It didn't hurt him. I think Kalani got one of. Did he get one of those against Arizona too?
They tried to punt. They ran a fake punt at the 1 yard line.
All right. That was the worst thing.
And it didn't hurt him either because the team missed a field goal.
The fake punt against Boise was the mistake. It was 4th and 19 from the 3 yard line. All right, that's it. Let's all admit That was the one thing Kalani did. Man, do yourself a favor. Go back and think about your first day, your first year at a big-time job. What mistakes did you make?
I killed a guy on accident one time.
Really?
I murdered him. This was wasn't even on accident.
At the hotel?
I got really mad.
Just out of rage?
There was a guy was vacuuming the hallway.
And he looked at you wrong?
Threw him over the balcony.
And just, oh, okay. Well, that's what you got to do because
it's a disgrace.
It looks like an accident. Yeah. That's, oh, I've always
said
that.
I think it was a suicide.
It's the best way to kill somebody.
Just had enough.
Just find somebody near a railing that you hate. Kalani Sitake.
We were on a cruise. I don't know how it happened.
No, there's no railings outside, so you got to cash them inside. And then how about that?
Catch me outside. How about that?
If Kalani's biggest mistake is that he dialed up a fake punt that was a little too cute, all right, I'll chalk that up. I'll take that. I'm trying to think back to Kyle Whittingham's rookie year as a head coach in 2005. That was a team that made a bowl game. That was the year that Brian Johnson got hurt, I don't know, 9 or 10 games into the season. It was a good year, not a great year. I don't remember as a player there being some glaring mistakes. I don't think Kyle Whittingham had to make any staff changes after that. I know Kyle Whittingham opened up a little bit as he grew as a head coach. In 2005, he was a little puckered, had a little bit of the greased BB effect. And that means you couldn't squeeze a greased BB out of his nose because that nose was so puckered up there. Kyle Whittingham learned to be a little more curt with the media, to be a little more, not malicious, but Kyle Whittingham will answer your question directly. If you say, Coach, how did the linebackers play today? He will not expound on anything more than, I thought the linebackers were good, good competition, really like this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy. So he basically gives you a diplomatic non-answer all the time. That's a little bit of what Kyle Whittingham had to learn, but that's about it. My point is, it could have been a lot worse for Kalani. The house could have come down. It could have been a clusterfrank of epic proportions.
The worst
like
part
what,
of the 2000,
like what's going on in Oregon.
The worst part of the 2005 season for Utah was they lost to New Mexico at Rice-Eccles Stadium, 31-27. So everyone that was on that team was a loser. Looking more at
quick update, Ben. I'm sure you meant starters on that team, and I'm excluded from that. I was a backup in 05.
I just mean everybody.
No.
Who had the Utah
I take
that
no
year.
Responsibility for any losses of for teams that I was not starting on.
Here's the 2019 BYU schedule now that they announced this morning that they're going to play on the road at Tennessee. They've got the Utes. They play at Tennessee. Then they've got USC and Washington at home. So three of their first four games at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. That's a great start. Then you have a three-game road trip on all over the country. At Toledo, you stop in the middle at Utah State, then you head up to the northwest to take on Washington State, then you return home to take on Boise State. You finish the season with three straight weeks of Idaho State at UMass and at San Diego State. Now, here's the weird thing. You've got 11 games already scheduled, but you've got three open dates, October 26th, November 2nd, and November 9th.
Well, keep October 26th open so the kids can have a good time at Halloween.
But you're not going to have two bye weeks in a season, so that means you're going to have to fill two of these weeks with games. Well, they've already got 11 games scheduled. What's the only loophole to playing 13 games in college football?
You
got
to play Hawaii.
You have to play Hawaii. So BYU will most likely schedule Hawaii in one of these games and then get to add another opponent. I'm sure they'll aim high, and if they have to, they'll add a lower-level team. But they would like to aim high and I'm sure get a better November game if they could play a really quality team on November 9th or the 2nd.
This isn't just a Rubik's Cube, though, where everything fits into place. Like you mentioned, the 2019 schedule is stacked right now, but BYU clearly had to add Idaho State as a contingency plan because had they not added the Bengals of Idaho State, you would have had an open date from late October to late November. And you don't want to be heading into a season with nearly a month vacant in your schedule. That's a big concern for Tom Holmo. But as you mentioned, starting the 2019 season with Utah in Lavelle Edwards Stadium at Tennessee, you get USC in Provo, Washington in Provo, Toledo, Utah State, Wazoo, Boise State. BYU's got a great chance in a lot of those matchups. Because remember, these teams are going to change a lot. By 2019, Washington could have a different head coach. It's obvious that USC is going to be talented every year. I'm never going to pencil Utah or BYU in to beat USC because they're just so talented. But when did Tennessee last live up to their potential? Tennessee's been a hot mess for the last six seasons. They could easily be a hot mess in 2019. But, man, I hate the idea of opening a season with a non-conference emotional rivalry game.
It's going to be tough for Utah. I mean, that's a bizarre game. We'll see what the teams look like. Obviously, it's hard to project out quarterbacks, it won't be Tanner Mangum unless some bizarre injury he gets hurt and gets to redshirt.
Well, he'll be 35 by then, for crying out loud.
He probably plays this year and then explores his opportunities to go pro if he can. If everyone says, you didn't have a pro season, you've got to come back, he'll come back and play a senior season at BYU. His pro career is likely over at that point because he'll be, 26 years old, and very rarely are quarterbacks getting drafted in the NFL at 26 years old, but then they would be starting a new player, starting for the first time coming up in that 2019 season. It's a fun schedule. I'm excited for that. This is what the future of BYU schedules will look like and need to look like. Tom Holmoe set himself up for this when BYU wasn't able to join a P5 conference, which is what they wanted, and now refuses to join a G5 conference. They're going to have these murderer rows of games for 6, 7, 8 weeks at a time like they do here, and we'll see who they add to fill in those October, November, and mid-November weeks by the end of the season.
I love also that BYU's found ways to schedule games with Washington State, with UCLA, with Arizona late in the year. At some point, I want to say it was when the Pac-10 went to the Pac-12. They made an announcement that year that Pac-12 non-conference games have to be played in the first month of the season. And then each and every offseason since then, BYU has managed to schedule games with Pac-12 teams after September. They've got games in October. They've got games in November. Tom Holmoe is a smooth operator, man. Racking up those minutes, calling up these schools. He's the hardest working AD in college football, man.
Let's hope he has free nationwide minutes. Let's hope he's not getting charged for long distance.
I got a really great text the other day from my provider. It said, because I have the unlimited data plan. I got the same plan since I was in high school, but grandfathered into that bad boy.
Must be nice.
And they said that while I still have unlimited data because I've gone over, they're going to start to downgrade my speed.
Yeah.
I said, who the hell do you think you are, North Korea?
You get a hardwire now, 56K modem.
Well,
you have to do the dial-up.
For unlimited data. So don't slow down
my data.
They're
still giving you unlimited data, just at a much slower pace.
Well, how could they do that? I'm the consumer. Isn't anyone thinking of my rights?
No.
How am I supposed to watch people cut their fingers off on Instagram Live?
Roosevelt's not in office anymore? No, we're business friendly here.
I follow a girl from the UK on Facebook who likes to cut her fingers off.
Coming up next.
Big part of my research.
Football at 50. BYU's taking their spring football to St. George. We'll tell you why. We'll talk more about the Utah Jazz at the trade deadline. Stay tuned. Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFAM.
Gunther and Ben in the app.
Gunther and Ben, 1320K fan, 542. He's Kyle Gunther. I'm Ben Anderson. A very happy Thursday.
I want to clear something up that was brought up earlier on the show. We were talking about the type of player that will or will not come to the state of Utah. My guy Mike, the accountant on Twitter, that's our buddy Mike. I wonder what he does for a living.
I think he's a pro bowler.
I would assume he's a cartographer or something, some sort of a ship builder, maybe a works behind the scenes on movies or something, a welder. Mike just asked if I implied earlier in the show that 4- and 5-star quarterbacks and receivers are swissy divas, and that's why they don't want to come to Utah. Swissy, of course, means sweaty little wussy, and diva, of course, means what you think it means. And yes, let me make it very clear, I have always said that quarterbacks and receivers and skill position players are divas. But look at the history we have here in our state. BYU is a little different because they have access to top flight LDS guys like Austin Colley, like John Beck and Max Hall. But for Utah, look at the high number of guys they've put into the NFL at defensive line, at offensive line. Certainly in the secondary, they've had plenty of success. But when it comes to quarterbacks and wide receivers, the numbers aren't as impressive. Of course, Steve Smith was as tough as they come. He came from Southern California, had a great career here. But what I meant and what I said was that the average 4- and 5-star quarterback, if he's in Southern California, he's not going to go to a cold weather place. Why on earth would you? You know, this little snow that we had today that everybody deals with, you know, that would stop businesses in California.
Sure.
That type of weather does. It shuts the whole place down. We here in this state don't quite get a grasp of what that's like for these guys. They never have a concept of a changing of the season. So, yes, it is a battle that Utah's got to fight. I think right now we are the only state out of 50 in our country that puts fake beer in the grocery stores. That is a battle that you have to fight. They put a gun in your face if you try to order a beer without food in this place. Maybe I exaggerated that, but they'll ask for two forms of ID. The manager will come out and get up in your face. Did you just order a margarita without food? Get on the ground. I'm going to stun gun your ass.
They're trying to lower the blood alcohol content level on DUIs now.
Oh, you got to
cut it in half.
Oh, make it 0.01.
Not that you and I are trying to say you should drive drunk, but
no,
there should be abilities for adults to be adults.
No, I think you should serve real beer in stores that serve beer. And so when we're talking about the ability for Utah to build their identity, they've got that on the offensive line, on the defensive line, because those guys are tough. Those guys are tougher on average. They're playing a position that requires you to be in a fight every play. So that's why Utah's got to continue to focus on the offensive and defensive lines.
We want to see how you drive coming up this Saturday at K1 Speed in Sandy, 725 East, 106 South. And we want to get you qualified to win the NASCAR Driveway coming up March 10th through the 12th. Plus, get you hooked up with a four-pack to K1 Speed in Sandy. Give us a call right now, 801-483-1320. Our fastest racer, our fastest qualifier racing at K1 Speed in Sandy is going to win the NASCAR trip coming up March 10th through the 12th. Each listener will compete individually for the best time score. If you want to come hang out Saturday, 10 to noon, at K1 Speed in Sandy, give us a call. Be the third caller through, 801-483-1320. And actually, let's get two different listeners qualified here, the third and the fourth caller, 801-483-1320, 801-483-1320. Will we cut Red Hot Chili Peppers from our show entirely?
No!
Will we just get rid of that band entirely from what we do here?
I just want that drop. That's perfect for a giveaway so people know there's a giveaway happening. How else are they supposed to know?
They listen to what we're saying. They listen to what I say, and I say we're giving stuff away, and they get that.
Give it away now. See, it's what you play in that situation. Speaking of trying to have a unique recruiting pitch, Utah and BYU have always gone after this strategy of trying to recruit guys early.
Be the first.
Be the first to put an impression out there for a kid. Who cares if he gets an offer later to USC or any other big school? Try to have that first impression, because that does mean a lot to especially a football player that, you know, is all full of bravado and pride the way a lot of these guys are. Well, BYU just received a commitment for the class of 2021. Now, right now is the year 2017.
So if you were starting your freshman year in high school right now, you would graduate in 2020. 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. If you went to a four-year high school, you're graduating
in 2020. That means
you're a freshman.
This kid, Logan Fano, just committed to BYU class of 2021. He is an eighth grader.
I would also. Junior
high.
Could be totally wrong, knowing how BYU has to recruit. This kid could be LDS and could be planning on serving a two-year LDS mission. This kid could not appear at BYU until 2024, and he just committed to BYU in 2017.
And if that's the case, you know, that's quite a long timeline here. But we're also talking about someone who must be an extreme athlete. Heck, if you have armpit hair in eighth grade, you're ahead of the curve. So, you know, I have nothing but respect for these guys that are prospects at a young age. But I understand also why BYU's got to do this. It's tough to be optimistic about a kid who has yet to take a pre-SAT. He's not even taken a practice SAT yet. Has this kid taken algebra yet?
Look, I think it's gross because he's an eighth grader. And that's not just BYU. That's everyone who's gone out and offered a scholarship to a kid who's in junior high school. It's just too much. It's too much pressure on young kids who aren't even close to even thinking the way adults think. Nobody is at eighth grade.
You think it's too much pressure?
I think it's way too much pressure to put on a kid at this age. And then I also hate that you become such old hat by the time you're a senior in high school if you're BYU and you've been floating around this kid for that long. That you want the new thing when you're in high school. You want the next thing. You want what's exciting and new. So if in 2021, USC comes knocking on this kid's door in the last 2 weeks and says, come take an official visit, kind of like what happened with J2Fele, that's what excites the kid. When you've been around forever, they feel like they can pick you up and put you down. That's why high school kids don't treat their parents well. Because they've been around forever, but they're going to treat their girlfriend amazingly well because they say, oh, you're the next new thing.
Oh, man, I would have loved to have treated my girlfriend well in high school. I couldn't get
one.
Yeah, I couldn't find one there.
I'm with you there, man.
No, you know, the thing is, football is different than a lot of other sports. You know, sometimes there's familial connections in tennis. From what I understand, Serena and Venus Williams' father pushed them very hard. Tiger Woods' father obviously famously pushed him in golf. But football is more of a familial sport. Because, frankly, nobody wakes up one day and says, you know what I want to do? I want to smash my body into another human being. I just turned 16, and I just thought, I'm going to be the next Lawrence Taylor. No, it doesn't really happen. You learn football because of your father, because of your uncle. So in that sense, BYU can look at a kid and see, I don't know about Logan Fano's history. I'm assuming sure. He's got a dad or an uncle or somebody played.
Fun nobody knows what his history is.
Fun nobody knows what fun.
Probably has fun no history because he's only 13 years old.
That is true. And he's a guy that's going to lean on that familial history, and I think BYU realized that, and they said, we're just going to invest in this kid.
And this doesn't always work out. I think Utah was the first to offer Sam Darnold. They were the first to offer Jack Sears, both out of San Clemente High School, and both those kids play at USC next year. So it doesn't necessarily work out. And if you're good enough to get those big recruits or those big offers, you're still going to explore those big offers. At the same time, if you can get a kid to commit to your program and it sounds like he's going to be very solid, it can be beneficial. Look at another kid that Utah has offered early in the process, Jack Tuttle. He committed to Utah, a four-star quarterback, and now he's actually taking an unofficial visit to Utah right now, and I think he's with another four-star wide receiver that he's trying to recruit to the University of Utah in Kyle Phillips, who's a class of 2017 kid. That can be the benefit. If you get somebody who's so sold on your program for long enough, they will help you recruit at a level which you can't do because you can't be at a kid's high school every day the way a Jack Tuttle can with the other four-star kids in the state of California.
Now, also, Jack Tuttle's a kid from a pretty well-off area. His parents can afford to send him on an unofficial visit.
Out of state.
The state, Utah, or none of these schools can pay for an unofficial visit.
Sure.
Now, they can't restrict
sure they
you
can.
From showing up.
Right.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Wink, wink. Yeah, and no schools would ever break NCAA
ever.
Rules.
Yeah.
Unless you're talking about Ole Miss, who recently got busted, allegedly giving a recruit $13,000, who never even signed with their school.
But they would never put him on a flight somewhere.
No, I don't think that's possible. You know, the NCAA can check into flight records and all that. You got NAFTA. You got
NAFTA is definitely a big part of it.
NAFTA is a big deal there. You got the TSA.
The NSA.
The NSA.
The CIA. No,
the TSA recently got busted with a plan that had been over the last 20 years. They'd smuggled at least 20 pounds of cocaine through security themselves. So other than that, you know, the TSA is just very busy on all that. But go back and read through the allegations against Ole Miss. And if you're a hardcore fan of any college football team, and understand that this is what the NCAA found out about allegations of Kim Dichey's father getting $800, another recruit getting thousands of dollars, a $2,800 gift to a recruit. If you're wondering how your top program, whatever school you're a fan of, if you're wondering how they can compete with Bama and Ohio State, you know, schools like Clemson, schools like Ole Miss, well, find a way to own a business and find a way to have that business give a recruit $13,000 and see if it works.
Let's talk more recruiting in BYU at Football at 50.
1320 KFAN brings you Football at 50. BYU, Utah, the National Football League. Every hour at 10 till the hour, it's Football at 50 on 1320 KFAN.
You know, BYU's recruiting heart may have been saying, you know, a 13-year-old is too young. You know, the heart may have been saying Fano, but their body was certainly saying yes.
BYU trying to get in on recruiting Penei Sewell, the top recruit in the state of Utah, coming up in the class of 2018. He'll be a part of the next National Letter of Intent Day. By going down to St. George and moving their entire spring football camp down there. Now, is it strictly for Penei Sewell? Actually, maybe, but they're at least going to down to play in some warm weather. It's going to be a fun trip to kind of get all the guys together and unite them. Professional teams do this a lot. The Jazz used to like to take their fall camp out of state. They'd go to Idaho or they'd go down to St. George and play to kind of get rid of the distractions, take the family out of the picture, and just focus on coming together as a team. BYU, though, moving down to St. George for their spring football camp starting up here next week.
Is there a water park or something down there? I know there's a golf course, and I know there's not even a casino in St. George. So, and obviously BYU's players would never be involved in that. But
not once.
Back to your question about, is BYU going to St. George just for Penei Sewell? Well, yeah, they are. They absolutely are. It doesn't hurt them if BYU doesn't land Penei Sewell because of this little stunt. It's a few hours that BYU's team gets to drive, and BYU's got the resources to do this. But I think it's reasonable to speculate this trip could cost $250,000. you have 100 players,
yep.
and then maybe 100 other staffers you're going to have to bring down there for at least 2 or 3 days.
Well, again, yeah, just calculate it out. 100 players, it's probably going to cost you $250 each player. Easily over a couple of days, and yeah, that money starts to add up really easily. It can skyrocket from there.
Well, that's just the players, you know, let alone right. the staff members. Yeah, it could be closer to $500,000, but that's pennies compared to what BYU could make. If you've got an offensive line that's good enough to help you win 10 or 11 games, you knock off some big programs. I mean, bada boom, bada bing. That's what you're trying to do here. And BYU, as an independent team, got to do everything in their power to get attention to play this game, because they're not just going to be caught up in the wave of momentum of Power 5 money.
Now, again, to get up to $250,000 for 100 players, that's an average of $2,500 each. But you could easily get there. You're not going to spend $2,500 on food, but travel, boarding, the food when you are down there, plus all the coaches that you have to move down. I'm with you. I think it could be a huge expense to get down there.
It costs $15,000 at a relatively non-expensive restaurant to feed a football team and staff members. And that was 15 years ago, because I asked one time, as Utah football, every once in a while I got to go out to a restaurant, and they would do that instead of just bringing food in. They would say, all right, let's get you players all to go to the local whatever, burger place, wherever it was. And they let you order whatever you want. And I asked our director of football operations one time what the bill is for something like this every time the team goes out. And he said, this one costs a little over $14,000.
Seems like a lot.
It's one meal.
But again, I like this move for BYU. I like the idea of going down and trying to play.
I eat a lot of shrimp. I mean, they're
good shrimp.
They're really good shrimp.
Those little ones, not the rock shrimp.
But then, you know, different times, and you got to remember hotel rooms. You can bunk 2 and 3 guys together there, I'm sure.
But you have to rent out an entire hotel in St. George, because they don't have these enormous hotels. That it's just going to cost you a ton of money to get down there for BYU. But I think it could be worth it, because you're not just recruiting Penny Sewell, you're recruiting kids in the Vegas area, in the Arizona areas as well. And it'll be fun. It gives the fans an opportunity to go down there and check out their team. There will be one open practice for fans if they want to travel down to BYU and see them, or you can stick around and in Provo see them on March 25th at their spring scrimmage. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jazz at the NBA trade deadline with our Utah Jazz insider, Tony Jones. Stay tuned. It's Guther and Ben
on 1320 KFAN.